Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Bridgerton season one is over, and we're getting ready for season two. Hello, everybody. I'm Sarah Carradine, and I'm here with the Dark Walk, Geneva Guadalupe. Geneva, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm very excited that season two is here, and I can't wait to binge watch the whole thing this weekend. I've been waiting for this for so long, and you know, we've seen season one a few times at this point, and we've finally gotten through recapping it once again. So I'm very happy to talk about season two with you all today.
And Sasha Joseph is here too. Sasha, hello.
Hello. I can't believe we're here. I'm here with my mallet and my extra special outfits because season two is here. We have an Indian lead. I cannot believe it. And I know we're not, just so everyone knows, we're talking about the book today. Yeah. Sarah will talk more about it, but I'm just excited. I can't believe it's time.
And how could the Dark Walk walk out in any way without Kirsten McInnes? Kirsten McInnes, how are you?
I am doing great. I literally derailed this podcast by getting stuck behind a horse-drawn carriage. So I'm in the Bridgerton era mindset, and I am so excited to talk about the second book, The Viscount Who Loved Me, to prepare us for season two. This is one of the best books in the whole series. It's going to be such a good season. I'm just so excited.
That's wonderful. Well, clip-clop, let's talk about book two. So first of all, I just wanted to ask everybody, as you read it, what was your overall experience reading it? Now, Kirsten for the 100th time, me for the first time, Sasha, I don't know what time you were up to. First time, and Geneva. Geneva also for the first time. Let's just get a general survey. I will just start with me briefly. I was delighted. I'm so glad that I was compelled to read this book. I was smiling the whole way and I was thinking, how can I keep up my reputation of being an aromantic, oh, that's not quite the word, non-romantic cynic when I'm sitting here with a huge grin on my face, just really being swept along would be how I would describe my response. What about you, Sasha?
Same. I mean, we were really dragging Anthony before, right? And then I read this and I was like, got it. I see why y'all like him. I get it. I love reading. I finished this book in 2 days, technically. And the only reason it went to the second day is because it was 4 a.m. the first night, so I needed to just put it away. But it's so much fun, so different from the first book. And I appreciate the characters feel grown up. And I know Kate is literally older than Daphne, but in a lot of ways, like, they're not as naive, and I'm into it.
Fantastic. And Kirsten, what's it like for you to come back to it after this time?
So this was my third time, I think, reading this book. And I'm a huge, romance novel rereader. Like, it does not take away from the enjoyment at all to read something I've already read before, especially when it's something so, light and delicious and just so cute. And I just love that You know, the first Bridgerton novel kind of goes into the trope of fake dating, which, like, a lot of people love fake dating tropes, me among that number. But this one just relies so much on, like, sisterhood, and that makes it extra special.
Oh, absolutely. And Geneva, for you, what were your feelings as you read the book? What was the emotion that came up?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time I was kind of like, oh, of course you all hate each other. That's clearly a lie, you know, or things like that, or, you know, with interactions between Kate and Anthony. And actually, I think I really appreciated Colin in this book. I just found him funny. He kept trying to stir up a lot of drama, make his brother mad. But, you know, I think with this, I was really kind of glad to get the chance to you know, explore the other siblings a bit more, because obviously, you know, the first book is a bit more focused on Daphne, but we don't see as much of her. You know, she does make an, you know, appearance. But I think what I really did kind of getting to like was understanding Anthony a bit more. You know, I think I complained a lot about Anthony with, you know, the last season. But I think, you know, even getting a sense of, you know, how much like he really appreciated his father, and understanding that sort of relationship and that dynamic and how that loss really affected him and also has a huge impact on what happens later in this book. You know, I kind of really enjoyed diving deeper when it came to understanding his story and understanding now kind of him stepping into the forefront, you know, realizing, well, okay, now it's time I kind of have to do my duty and get married.
Yeah, I mean, you've gone there. So let's talk about characters. I mean, I am an outlier in the Dark Walk. I liked Anthony in the season one. I was alone in that. I found him more unlikable in this book, but enjoyably so. Enjoyably so. I enjoyed not liking him. and the other thing that happened, of course, is every time I read Lady Whistle Down, I heard Julie Andrews. So that was kind of, that was really nice. But let's talk about the characters as we've started to touch on them there, Geneva. The other siblings in particular, it's very interesting. They are, and Kirsten, you've been telling us this, but the other siblings are different. There's a difference to them. Colin in particular, I think, is much more three-dimensional and lively in the book. But what were we thinking about these characters?
Yes, I think you hit the nail on the head about Anthony in this book. Like, I like him as like a dark romantic, like, hero figure, but what we get to know of his personality is he's kind of a lovable curmudgeon in this book. And that's like, that's exactly right. That's the energy that I want. I like in probably from the brothers, Colin is like the more quote unquote likable one that you would think, oh, Colin is the one that you want to end up with, or you want like your friend to end up with. But Anthony's probably the one you actually end up with.
It's true.
Yeah, I really liked Anthony, even though I was like, oh, you're really bothering me. But here I am still thirsting for you. So I really understand Kate, because I was like, oh, no, we shouldn't like this man. He's a mess. But I loved it. I appreciated his whole just his whole arc, this book, because we really get years of his life.
Yeah, and I mean, an understanding of him too. He's not mean or awful. He just has a feeling about himself. Spoilers from now on for the book. We don't know what happens in the filming of season two. None of us have watched it. But as far as the book goes, spoilers. So we find that he has this idea that he's going to die at 38, and so he doesn't want to form an attachment to his wife. He needs to produce an heir for the Bridgerton name, but he doesn't want to form an attachment, and so we understand that. And the other thing that's really delightful, because we know we're reading a romance novel, is he is determined not to fall in love. He's going to logic his way through it, and we sit back and go, oh, you foolish man, just you wait till the right person comes along. What do you think about that, Geneva?
Yeah, no, I think that's always like when I'm reading these books, like even though I love them so much, I just laugh because I'm like, okay, you're saying this, but in reality, like it's not what you're claiming or what you're saying. Because, you know, like there are certain points where he like started to have dreams, you know, about Kate, or started to have like potential feelings, and like he's just like, well, no, like I can't, or like this doesn't make sense. And it's like, no, it does make sense, you know, don't fight it. So I think some of those things are always quite funny to me, but also I quite enjoy them because I kind of like to see that, you know, slow progressive development in a different, you know, relationships, especially, you know, between Kate and Anthony, particularly in this book. But also, I think, you know, with him, we, you know, kind of start to, you know, see kind of how he, you know, I think even though, you know, there, I guess there's a lot of perceptions of how Kate feels about him, you know, based on what's been said and about him being a rake, you know, that sort of thing, you know, I think in some other instances, he tries to kind of prove otherwise with, you know, how he treats Kate's sister, you know, Edwina. So, and like, so I think, you know, Kate tends to be also surprised in some of those instances when he when she sees like what he's like doing or how he's taking that, you know, decently seriously.
Yeah, let's talk about Kate. I mean, she is I haven't read a lot of romances, but I have read some. She's unusual as a wonderful heroine because she herself is not seeking love. So I was immediately caught by this idea of the heroine of a romance novel not looking for love. She's quite old. She's 1 and 20, so she's on the shelf. And her entire focus as far as the beginning of the book is to have her sister, her younger sister, Edwina, find a good match and have a good life. And she almost, she's not made up to the spinster life, but she doesn't fear it in the way she fears it for her sister, interestingly. Kirsten, how did Kate strike you?
Yeah, so Kate is very much a little bit of a tragic figure to start. You find out she lost her mother quite young and that her stepmother has taken up for her, right? So it kind of lends this entire view of Kate's life that she has never really gotten what she hoped for. And I think at this point has kind of given up on that. She even gave up having her season because she knew the family could only afford one. So she waited until Edwina was old enough to also come out so that they could both have that experience together. She just is, like, her personality, she's a firecracker. She is so smart. She is incredible. But at her core, she is so loyal to her sister, so loving with her family, and has just, like, she's just so willing to give that she's the kind of person that you want them to have love, even when it's, like, is she not looking for love, or does she think that she's just not going to ever find it because she's never had the things that everyone else has had, right? And so it kind of, you root for her so much the whole time.
And she's seen, right? She sees herself, and I think consciously and subconsciously her half sister and stepmom also see her, right, as this second of two. So I think that there's a lot of internalized, which comes up a lot even when, you know, she falls in love and gets married, even then there's a lot of second fiddle feeling that she feels just because of this internalized, you know, like pity. I don't know if that's the right word, but internalized, just not feeling so good about herself. And that's why I like her, because I think I like romance novels where the protagonist, especially the female one, isn't necessarily just like, I want love and that's it. It's very, I like the, no, I'm here, I have a purpose. Men just happen to be like the secondary. So I appreciated it. I really like Kate. I also want to say with Kate, we have to talk about Newton, the corgi. Yeah, you say corgi, I don't know.
Corgi, yeah, you're right.
Corgi, great. Who just like is such a menace and the cutest thing in the world. And I don't even like dogs. I like them from a distance, I should say. But it's just Kate.
So you wouldn't like it if you got knocked into the pond in the park by the dog? You wouldn't like that?
I would fight Newton.
Would you say your relationship with Newton is similar to Mary's relationship with Newton?
Yeah, like Newton would very much be an ankle biter, right? Like for me, where I'd be like, get out of here, weirdo. But have I seen many compilations of, you know, back that ass up to corgi butt? Yes, I have. So I love dogs from a distance.
Corgis are so cute too. One of the best videos I've ever seen on the internet is called the Corgi Flop. And it's a little corgi in a life jacket jumping into a lake. And he just like runs up, stops, and just like leaps with all of his limbs out and just lands in the water in his life jacket. It's the cutest thing in the world.
So or, Newton.
Yes. Or look out corgis and sweaters on Instagram. Mm. Just look it up. It'll make your life better. It's delightful.
San Francisco has a corgi con and it's like a whole like where you just like bring your corgi and go to the beach.
That's okay. My sister loves corgis so much. She doesn't even like dogs, but like if she sees a corgi, she will start to cry. And if I took her to corgi con, she would die.
Yeah, I just love their butts. Like,
there's a corgi that lives in my building. It's just a puppy. So it's like only a couple months old still now. And the first time I saw it, I had just been walking with my sister. I go to get in my house. I called my sister and I was like, I just met a baby corgi only like 8 weeks old. And she literally turned and ran back to my building to like find this woman with her corgi to meet it. And she did.
Oh my god.
And I was like, you're gonna get me like served a restraining order, Vianna. You sound insane. But she was like, I met him. You're so cute.
People who have puppies love you to love their puppies almost more than people who have children want you to. Mm-hmm. I mean, Newton loves Mary. He's not a menace. He loves her.
No, he's a menace. He has been reasons for many frustrations for it's our like, characters.
It's the thing where, like, if you like someone, behavior is cute, but if you don't like them, it is like sketchy. It's the same thing. It's like, okay, Newton has become a menace, not because he is menacing, but because it's unwanted.
And he's knocking people over.
He's so animated in the book as well. It's not like he's an ornament. We're talking about characters, and I think Newton has to be listed amongst them because the way she writes him, you feel the dog, you feel the size, you feel it when he flops down on a chair or when he rolls over to have his belly rubbed. And as well as that, he serves great purpose in the plot as well. So I think the introduction of Newton, also the idea that Kate does have love. She has the love of her dog. Now, Mary is interesting. Mary is the mother of Edwina and the stepmother of Kate. And I love that we get all the way stitched through the book, Mary's vow to Kate's father, her vow to Kate, and her vow to Kate's mother. There's a very moving scene in flashback, or she tells how she went to the grave of Kate's mother and vowed to love her as if she were her own. What do we think about Mary, Geneva? What was your response to her?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, kind of how we touched on with how Kate, I guess, really isn't putting love in the forefront for herself. Like, I think we're starting to notice that Mary's kind of pushing it a bit. But even so, I think, you know, there was one point in the book where it was mentioned by Mary that, like, you know, even though Kate isn't like her, you know, biological daughter, you know, because of the relationship she has as a stepmom, she, you know, has to put in, you know, twice as much love and effort in order to, you know, make sure that she, you know, is, you know, afloat and is, you know, successful in her life or happy and fulfilled. So I think that we kind of see this sort of, you know, endearing relationship between, you know, Kate and between Mary and with Mary, basically it was interesting too, because there was a conversation where she refers to her as Mary, and even Kate was like, yeah, I don't know why I still call her Mary, but I just do. But, you know, she's had this so close relationship with me. And so I think we kind of see that sort to, you know, form throughout the book, but she also seems to advocate and support her. Although, you know, I think sometimes she was doing certain things. I think with Kate, where it was like suspect, because she's like, oh no, I shouldn't stay to chat with Anthony. Well, oh, Anthony, why don't you go on a walk? Go along on a walk with Kate, walk the dog, you know, I would bore him, that sort of thing. So I think there are a lot of interesting, I think, conversations and interactions that we see from Kate in the book.
Yeah, and what? Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was just going to ask other thoughts on Mary. I'm very fond of Mary, and I'm really intrigued to see how they're going to treat her in season two. But what about you?
Yeah, I think it's so hard to tell, you know, how this will be adapted to a show, because much like, you know, book one to season one, there was a lot, like they didn't really take much out of season one, but they inserted a lot more into it that is going to feed into it. So in book one, we never had to deal with Lord Featherington's death. So how is that going to be combined into book two? Who's going to be that heir? Like, how is that going to be? Also with Mary, like, will we get to see Mary as kind of like a sympathetic mother figure the way we see Violet, or are they going to try to make her out to be, you know, a little bit less pleasant because kind of like the evil stepmother trope is so, it's so appealing to have it right there, right? So I'm a little nervous that they maybe would lean a little bit more into that. Maybe even just it seems like it's bad and then at the end they realize that it's not, but I don't know. What do you think, Sasha?
Yeah, I just really hope they don't lean into that in the book, right? Because I think it can get really messy, because I loved Mary. She's the one that tells Kate, right? Like, it's a huge turning point in the book where, one, she actually, well, better than Violet at least, tells Kate about the wedding night. That's number one, even as a stepmom. And then secondly, she's the reason Kate understands why she has bad dreams, or specifically with thunder and lightning. So she has been pivotal for Kate in many ways, but I think those two really stood out for me. So if they do her dirty, it's on sight, because Mary is very much like, she's so kind and she's built Kate up. And I want to say, low-key, even though they don't talk about it in the book a lot, I feel like Mary was low-key pushing Kate and Anthony together.
Oh, definitely. Well, she sent them on that walk, right?
Because that's the thing, too, with the family is, like, they're not super well off. So, obviously, it would be a boon if one of the daughters married rich. But you never really get the sense that Mary is pushing Edwina to make a match that she doesn't want to make. Like, she's just being like, well, we'll put you in for, like, Edwina's like the diamond of the season, right?
Right.
So she is getting, you know, put in front of all of these wealthy titled gentlemen. And Kate sees it as, okay, Edwina will marry well and I will not marry and I will be her companion. But Mary kind of has the view of, as long as one of them marries well, it's fine. And I want them both to be happy. And you can kind of see, like, the sparks between Kate and Anthony are more dislike to start. Like, this is definitely like an enemies to lovers trope instead of the fake dating. But the spark is there and Mary sees it and I think is definitely on board with pushing them towards each other.
Absolutely. I mean, and the thing about Mary too, I mean, I haven't read book one. I will, I promise. But
honestly, I would skip them.
Okay, I'll skip it. The Bridgerton, the Lord and Lady, the late Lord Bridgerton and Violet are said to have had this wonderful love match, and that's lauded and looked up at and held as a paragon of a love marriage. We feel very much with Mary that she also had a love marriage. I wonder, there's a very curious moment at the end of season one, and I don't think I brought it up in the episode where we talked about it, where Lady Whistledown refers to, briefly, a couple who, in having met, fled London, never to be heard or seen again. And it's very intriguing to me now when I was reading the book and I thought, oh, is it this couple? I don't know. The idea of the love marriage is very present with Mary as well. And I think certainly as an older woman, looking at her two daughters and this man, Anthony, like, it's pretty obvious if they are going to match with one, it's going to be Kate. So I really enjoyed Mary, and I hope that we get in season two, it's got a vigorous portrayal of her as I felt her to be as a woman. The comparative thing between the sisters is really interesting. I don't have a sister, but I really enjoyed that theme being opened up as Kate doesn't feel jealous of Edwina. Kate is perfectly happy to acknowledge that Edwina is more beautiful and she's petite and she's likable and everybody likes her. Kate's not worried about that, but what she doesn't like is receiving a compliment that she herself is beautiful. She sees that as a slight to her. So while there's no jealousy, there is a feeling where she happily puts Edwina ahead of her, but is perhaps cut if another person tries to make her feel good about it. It's an odd thing. I'm not describing it very well.
Yeah, so I think it's very interesting because I'm not sure. Geneva, do you have a sister? I feel like I'm the only one here who has a sister.
I do have a sister, yeah.
Okay, perfect. I was like, wait, I don't know. But yeah, so I have a sister and I think that we very much look related when you see the two of us together, but we're also super different. I'm tall and she's short. I have blonde hair. She has dark hair. I have blue eyes. She has brown eyes. Like we don't look quite the same. Like it was always like the joke going, Kirsten's dad is obviously the milkman. Ha ha. Which is like not true because I look like my dad's mom, but it is very interesting to have that dynamic between two sisters who are different but not like that different. But even like yesterday when my sister and I had our spa day, like one of the ladies was like, oh, which one of you is older? I can't tell. And my sister was like, well, that's kind of mean to you, Kirsten, like but she couldn't tell.
Oh my god.
I was like, I mean, you look like it's fine. You look, yeah, it's fine. But like that's like the same kind of thing, right? Where like my sister's like not, she's not upset to get a compliment, but then she's like, wait, but is that mean to my sister? I think that that's kind of the vibe, right? Where you kind of get slotted into like, this is your role in the family. This is your role in the family. And then when anything is counter to that, it can be very unsettling. I spent up until I was like 18 being like, no, Kirsten's the nerd. Kirsten's the smart one. Kirsten's like a loser. And then when I went to university, people thought I was dumb. And I was like, what? And then people will be like, oh, yeah, like Kirsten, like they value based on appearance rather than anything else. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm not the pretty one. What are you talking about? And it's just like a weird vibe. Like it's not any knock to someone being nice to me. It's just like in my head, it's still like, oh yeah, Vine is the pretty one. I'm the smart one. And that's just how it is.
Yeah. It seems like I think because she's aware of where, how Edwina is perceived and how she's supposed to be perceived. I think she just kind of has this thought in her head. Well, okay. She's the focus. She's the priority. She's the diamond of the season. She's the beautiful one, whatever, whatever. Not necessarily thinking she's not, but I think because the focus is on her and kind of how we talked about how she, allowed her to be the focus and the priority, I think because of that and wanting what's best for her sister, that is just kind of her, like, what she's laser focused on. And so I guess when there's any sort of reference to her potential love life, whatever her potential future or what that could be with somebody, that's just something that she's not focused on in her head. So it just, I think it just comes off strange and weird and like foreign, even though in reality it's like, no, I think that's something, it's like realistically, yeah, you also theoretically could be finding, a husband in the situation. It's not just Edwina, but I think because we know how much she cares for her sister and how much she places priority in her sister finding a good match, and she knows that based off of what she's heard and from what she knows about Anthony, it's not even Anthony. And then even overhearing Anthony talk about having messages while he's potentially married and that not being an issue, not thinking he's going to fall in love with somebody. Even if he's married to them, hearing things like that, that's kind of like, well, then this clearly, this guy would be awful for my sister. So like, why would I want that? So I think, yeah, it's complex because I don't know if she necessarily, I mean, I think in some ways it could seem like, oh, maybe she doesn't necessarily have this, you know, maybe confidence in herself. But I feel like also part of it's just more, I think she in this situation has a, she feels like she has a certain role and responsibility. And I think even Lady Whistledown kind of thinks it's funny, like, oh, why is it that Anthony has to seek the approval of the sister? You know, that's not, I think, normally what, you know, we would see. So I think that's also a very, you know, interesting dynamic within this book.
Yeah, it's very fun to see people kind of courting in a weird way where they have to court the sister if they want to get the diamond, which is, you know, atypical and I think very fun.
Yeah, that's lots of fun.
Yeah, sorry, Sasha, I will go ahead. Say, also, I think because, listen, our heroes are always flawed. I think it's an ego thing, too, that she is very much proud and she's had to fend for herself. So I think that's also a piece of it. And her and Anthony are very similar in a lot of ways, especially this way, where they are very prideful people. And that obviously gets in the way of a lot. But, you know, that's the plot points. And that's why we get a whole book out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the father's dead, so she is not quite in loco parentis, but I do love that idea that to get the diamond, you have to court the sister, and she's very aware of all the gentlemen approaching her. I'm really looking forward to seeing this sister dynamic play out in the season. I think the other aspect of the book that I wouldn't mind discussing before we go on to talk about what we think we're going to see in the televised version of this book is the eroticism in the book. I thought it was so well written in terms of that. I mean, slightly laughable from time to time, but it seemed, I mean, magically real. I was going to say real, but let's say magically real, because the clothes fall off with no problem and people orgasm the very first time they have sex and all of that. But leaving that aside, what did we think about the writing of the eroticism and its place in the book?
It's much less than at least the first book, the first show. I've not mm-hmm. read the book. And I like it because, listen, Kirsten had already told us there's a lot of nipple play. So I knew to expect that. But I also, here's the thing I will say, a little knock to Anthony. Whereas the Duke, what we saw in the season one was very, he felt more kind versus I think Anthony was very much rake with the capital R towards Kate. So again, I don't know if that's how the Duke actually was too, but you know, he's a little rough with her sometimes. I'm not against it. I think Kate is a grown-up, quote unquote, so like she can handle it. But I was like, is Edwina gonna have to deal with this? I surely hope not.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things too that a lot of times in romance novels, especially historical romance novels, they will like the roughness of the male lead is like a feature, not mm-hmm. like a flaw. But I do definitely see that point. The other thing too is in The Duke and I, the first book in the series, sex was a massive plot point because Daphne didn't know how babies were made. She didn't know about the Duke, like, not, quote, being able to have babies. She didn't know what any of that meant. So a big part of the book is they get married and they are having all of this sex and having an amazing time. Like, there's probably not a description of them, like, sitting on a ladder in the library getting head or anything like that. But, like, the sex is happening and there is a lot of it, whereas in this book, it's not about that. It's about both of them facing their own demons from their past. Kate with her fear of thunderstorms and Anthony with his fear of, you know, dying young and bees, really. Like, those are the two things that they need to resolve on their own based on their past trauma. So the sex is like a side part of it, where like obviously they get married, so they are going to have sex and they have fallen in love, so they're going to have sex, but it's not like the main plot of the second half of the book like it is in The Duke and I.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good point. I think she Julia, the writer, uses the sex to slightly for the titillation of it, but also to kind of open up and explore the relationship between the two of them. And that surprised me. It wasn't just straight, look, I'm going to now describe this sex act. It was, what is the relationship with these two people and how do they negotiate it, their physical lives together? So even before the married penetrative sex, we have some kissing and some sparks that are really beautifully described. And Kate is, she's a virgin, but she's not a blushing virgin, if you know what I mean. She is written older. She's 21 in the book. I believe she's older in the television series, which makes sense. So in our eyes, a more adult woman. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the agency that she had, her physical agency. And in fact, part of the thing that I thought was really effective was when she asked for a week's grace. They get married and she said, can I have a week before we have sex? And it's such a beautiful negotiation between the two of them where he tries to find out why she wants to wait. She says she wants to get ready, and he quite rightly says, how will you be preparing?
Yeah, that's the best line, because usually he's so gruff with her, but this time he's like, no, but just like tell me, because you're tripping. Like, that's literally what he meant, because he's like, you've lost the plot at this point, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing to note as well with like the, I guess, quote, spice level of these books, like this is it's the second book. This book was released in 2000, first of all, and romance novels have really, I feel like it was like 2005 to 2009 is where romance novels started going, like, I feel like that's when Nora Roberts was like really in her heyday of like, yeah, you're going to see someone like fingering someone on the back of a horse. Like, it's going to be all sex all the time. And so that's part of it as well. Regency romance has, for the most part, been a place where people who enjoy romance novels without all of the gratuitous sex scenes go to get that. Like, my mom loved romance novels and read so much Regency, and she didn't read pretty much any modern romance because she was like, if I wanted porn, I would get porn. Like, that's not what this is for me. And so that's also another like saving grace, not saving grace, but like another reason why for the most part, these seasons are going to be less quote unquote sexy than season one.
Yeah, my friend actually asked me, because she knows we're doing this podcast, so she's like, you know, you read the book, because I was telling her how I read the book in prep for this podcast, and it's really funny because she said, thank God, because she's now moved home, and I my mom asked to watch with me, and I was like, no, you're good, there's only a few sex scenes.
Well, in the book,
the show will probably exaggerate a little bit, but the reviews have started coming in that season two is less sexy, and people are, I think, a little upset about that because they got a false impression of what all of them would be like from season one.
Yeah, this one is very, I think, more quote unquote normal
rom-com. It's romance. It's not
calm, just erotic. Yeah, modern. Like, it feels the more like how you would describe a romance movie instead of like 50 Shades of Grey. That was the last one.
But as Kirsten said, sorry, Geneva, go ahead.
No, so I just wanted to say, like, because we kind of definitely touched on how there's going to be less of that. And there have been actually a lot of articles that have been released prior to the season that have been disclosing specifically that the season would have less sex scenes than, you know, the prior season. And it, of course, I think Kirsten definitely touched on, you know, that it's not necessarily the main plot line, but even I feel like the showrunner has also mentioned that for them, it was never really about quantity, and that they've used the intimate scenes to kind of tell the story and push the story further. And they've never done, you know, a sex scene for doing this sake of a sex scene. But even generally, I think with this book, we can tell it's a lot less than a lot of the Simon Daphne interactions. And I think they also kind of acknowledge that it's a different story with different characters. So in reality, we're not going to necessarily see what
kind of happen, but we, you know, we'll have that more, that slow burn, the, you know, the animosity, the chemistry leading up to that. And it just really wouldn't make sense according, you know, to the show and people running the show to kind of show as much as they did with season one, because the story isn't the same.
Well, everyone, just keep that spice level simmering along where it is while we take a break. And we're back for more spicy chat about the book. And now perhaps I think it would be a good time to talk about what we expect from the season. We've certainly seen some images. We've read some reviews. We don't know what happens. We don't know any of the changes. But what are you expecting to see and what are you hoping to see? Sasha, how about we start with you?
I'm excited. Oh, my God. There's so much. Okay. I'm really excited to see, I think, the interactions between Anthony and Kate, especially, obviously. And is it Pall Mall?
Yeah.
Wow. Cannot believe I got it.
I'm so excited for Pall Mall.
Yeah, because when I was reading it, I was like, is it Pall Mall? Okay. Like Paul Blart Mall Cop. Like, that's how I was reading it. And then I because I'm a stan, I watched the red carpet premiere on YouTube, and then I'm watching and they're like Pall Mall, and I was like, who, what is that? And then they and that's how the answered questions were hitting the ball through the target, and then they like picked, oh, you number six, now you can ask a question. So it was cute. So I'm very excited for that. As a very competitive human being, that piece like really stuck to me, because that's how I am when I play with my family and they all concede to me. So I can't imagine if I had siblings and, you know, it actually had to be competitive.
With the Pall Mall, I'm so excited for that. I love how in the flyer for the season, you know, Kate has got that black ball and Anthony has the pink ball next to him, and just thinking like, oh, they really hid the purple one from him. Like, this is so, it's so funny, and it gives you like those genuine family moments with the Bridgertons that make you see that they're like a special family, that, you know, as Violet says in season one, we actually like each other, and they do. And so I'm really looking forward to all of that coming out, especially with, you know, Violet hosting the house party, which will, I think, be at least a few episodes of the show. I'm just so excited. And interested in how they're going to handle how much of the book is really internal monologue with Anthony, you know, being concerned about dying young, and Kate kind of like going through her fear of Thunderstorm. You can at least see her fear physically, but I just think it's going to be interesting how they frame fear as like a central plot point of the show. What about you, Sarah?
Well, I'm such a looks person. I don't mean necessarily good looks, bad looks, but just looks. The look, the design is what I'm trying to say. The design of season one was so satisfying. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I have seen some images of the Queen's wigs that are wigging me out, so I can't wait to see her again. It's a strange feeling of, oh, I get to visit with these friends again. The Queen, Lady Danbury, Violet, the older women I'm enjoying. I want to meet Mary. I'm wondering how far they're going to stray from the book in terms of the cast of particularly the secondary and tertiary characters that were set up in season one. I imagine they're going to pick up and take those through this second season as well. I mean, why waste, you know, the good work of the writers and actors and costumers from season one? And because not a lot of those people are present in the book, it's going to be very interesting to see an integration. And this is what I thought very much about season one when reflecting it, and the fact that we watched it again and talked about it again was really illuminating. How the secondary and tertiary characters' plots wove in beautifully with the main plot. So it was either parallel plots of love, or it was oppositional plots of not love. There was, you know, joyful, knowledgeable sex. There was joyful, non-knowledgeable sex. you know, lucky we didn't see a lot of non-joyful sex because none of us want to see that. But ideas of ambition, ideas of position, who has it, who doesn't have it. And so I think that the writing throughout season one, where the tertiary and secondary characters' plots were woven in, I'm really hoping that they hit that again with season two. Because from the book, really, it's Kate and Anthony. Yes, there are these other characters that we've mentioned, but it's so much just the two of them and Newton that I'm hoping they can continue. Benedict, who we're all very fond of, Eloise, what's going to happen to her? Penelope, what's the Featherington story of the new air coming? How is that going to change things? But it can't just be that is happening at the same time as Kate and Anthony. What I want to see is how does it reflect the main plot? How does it illuminate the main plot? Is it parallel? Is it oppositional? So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. And the frogs.
Of course.
Yes, I think those would be really great. I think for me too, I am just looking forward to seeing, I think the Pall Mall. I think that's clearly going to be a really, you know, I think huge scene, you know, scene when we come across it in the season. But also I think just specifically the stuff that they add in and the characters that they add in, because we know that happened a lot in season one. I don't know if necessarily we're going to see a lot more of that, adding additional plot lines to engage with different characters, or if we're going to see kind of more of a focus on this book and not necessarily adding a variety of additional elements. So I'm intrigued to see kind of what that balance might be. I'm also intrigued to just kind of see just a lot of the general relationships and maybe how far they go, or how maybe accurate those portrayals will be, and how certain characters are, you know, presented in the book. Is it going to translate similarly to on screen when we see it on Netflix? And just, I think, you know, generally just kind of seeing when it comes to also the Bridgerton family and their particular stories, are they going to add a lot of other elements from the future books, you know, in this season, or are we going to be still kind of just focusing primarily on what we see here? So I think I'm just kind of interested to see, like, what will they pull from, you know, other books, or what will they be doing a lot more creativity this season in terms of who they incorporate and who they bring in, what plot lines they bring in. But of course, I think I'm just generally excited just to see it all on screen and kind of just see a lot of these conversations come to life.
Yeah, I think also something we need to talk about is, I feel like the bees, we talked a little bit about it the first time when, because they kept zooming in on it, like on the mm-hmm. CGI bee. But this time, that is the reason why Anthony is so fearful and feels like he's going to die, because their dad, the OG Viscount Edmund, mm-hmm. actually died via bee sting, which I still... Anthony's just as surprised as you and I are. So I appreciate that. It's not this like silly thing that we aren't supposed to be surprised by. I appreciate that it was very much, no, let's all talk through this. And then this is when I started softening on Anthony, because he sees his dad die. He was in the room with him for, you know, the whole night with the body rather. And then we get this moment of this 18-year-old kid that has to now take over for the whole family when his mom is pregnant still, you know, with the last kid. So like, that's how young, right, quote unquote, this family is. And to me, that is what really also humanizes Anthony than it did the last book, because I was like, well, yeah, you actually had a loving family and then it was ripped apart. Mm-hmm. So I understand what you mean and why you feel this way. And that's why he just can't imagine outliving his father, because his father is so magnanimous to him. And I don't know, I really appreciated that piece as well.
Yes. And then there is also one other thing with the bee sting as well. Yes. At the end of the book, Julia Quinn has her author's note at the end of book two. And basically it's like, yes, Anthony's father had been stung once before, but that is accurate. Typically bee sting allergies don't manifest until the second sting. So there's no way to actually know if Anthony is also allergic to bees and like maybe he would die young due to this. However, I'm the author of the book, and he lives to be 92. Like, he's not going to die of a bee sting. He's going to have a long life. So I really liked that she clarified that, because I feel like otherwise, like, the online, because romance novel sales jumped a ton over the last 2 years, but all of that market share went to Julia Quinn.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually kind of, like, honestly, please read these books, but also please read something else as well.
Helen Wong has really great books too. They're all Asian leads, and they're on, and they're like different on the spectrum in different ways. So the character. So it's really cool.
I still only read the first one of those.
Yeah. Oh, but... yeah. What is the Kiss Quotient?
Yeah. Kiss Quotient.
And then Bride Test, and then The Heart Principle. I just finished The Heart Principle. Anyway, so would recommend. There are others. And a lot of Indian ones, too. Anyway, I also want to say, with the bee, too, because, again, it just keeps coming up for me. The funniest scene, I have to say, right, is, again, a bee sting. Because Anthony, I think this is the moment where Anthony was like, oh, damn, I do like her. Because Kate is, like, stung by a bee. To this day, maybe I should have gone back and read, but I'm like, did she actually get stung, or did this man just get so paranoid?
She gets stung, like, on her collarbone. Okay, you know, of course, close to the breast area, so that Julia Quinn can explore her pink of nipple play.
And that's what everyone supposedly saw. At least that's what they claim they saw.
So. Yeah. So basically, he sees the sting and he goes into a panic, because last time someone in his life got stung, they died. And while, you know, he may not fully recognize yet that he is in love with Kate, he doesn't want her to die in front of him. So he's like, well, the only thing to do is to suck the venom out like a rattlesnake bite. It was the 1800s, okay? They didn't know so much about science. We'll give him a pass. But, you know, he gets really caught up in it, and her dress comes open, and so it looks like it's more of an amorous embrace, and they are walked in on by Mary, as well as
Lady Featherington.
Yes, Lady Featherington,
that's
yes.
That's the big issue.
I was like, wait, who's drama. The gossip? I was like, I know it's someone super gossipy.
Yeah, yes.
And yes, Lady Featherington.
Yeah, it's Portia, Violet, and Mary. Which Violet, I feel like, was so chill about it. That's how you know she went on a dark walk a few times with Edmund, because she's just kind of like, what the heck are y'all doing? Okay, like, you know, you
but
do,
also
you
I
do.
Guess after what happened with her, you know, her last daughter, it's like they just have scandal in this family at this point. So it's like, okay, what is
horny
it?
Horny bunch. Case, what
like,
can
what
we do?
Are you doing, Anthony? What's going on? And but then, of course. I mean, I would be concerned if literally my father died from a bee sting, and I see someone that, you know, I potentially care for potentially could die, and because you don't know how it's going to impact her. So, but of course, that led to everyone being like, you got to marry her.
Well, and it's also a super common trope in Regency romance that a country like party results in some hasty marriages upon return to the city.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And that's what I mean, we get many jokes about that too, and even Whistledown is very into it, but also we don't have to talk too much about Penelope, but I appreciate her being so kind to Kate. I think it's because Kate is so kind to her, and Anthony's very kind to her when Miss Fivehead
Cressida.
Yeah. I forgot her name. Not me forgetting her first name. Anyway, when she's being so evil, Kate and Anthony are pretty kind to Penelope. So those moments are where you're like, oh my God, like, this is a beautiful moment. And they're actually impacting their community because of it. And it was just, I don't know. It was so nice to hear. But then Anthony, just like the Duke, can't talk. You know, can't speak freely about his fears. And it's just the biggest issue is that he's afraid to fall in love because he's going to die early. And that's why he said, I'll marry you, because, you know, you're suitable. You challenge me. You're funny. But, like, you're not pretty enough for me to love. That's so messed up.
These men, literally, right? Why men?
Yes.
The drama.
I feel like we've kind of talked in broad strokes. Is there anything else that we need to bring up before we pack it in?
No, I think the last thing was that we need to, because I don't know if they'll bring it up in the show, is that there is an opera singer that he could have, he did have an affair with that he kept for a little bit. And then that's how him and Kate's first kiss happened, is because he says he spots Kate in his study with Miss Opera Singer.
Yeah.
So that's why, Kristen, drama. I was like, maybe they took that and made it into a full-on story.
That has to be it. And it has never occurred to me, even though I've read the book multiple times now.
Yeah.
I do love Kate, like, hiding under the desk, right?
Yes. So Kate was hiding the whole time because she didn't want to be seen by anyone. And turns out Mr. Rake obviously is going to rake all over the world into his office. So he's about to hook up with said opera singer and then sees her.
He's furious.
He's very, so mad. Very mad.
Oh, that's, I think, like, what I'm looking for.
What was Kate going to do? Sit and watch him bang an opera singer? Like,
yeah.
That would also ruin her reputation.
That definitely would too. And then she's like, oh, I was trying to avoid seeing you. And he's like, but you came into my office? And she's like, well, I didn't know it was your office. And he's like, yeah, sure. So of course,
these,
I think,
men in these books just think that all of the women are just like geniuses who are, and psychics who know everything about them and are like plotting their downfall, when it's like, she's never been there before. How does she know it's your office? Like, shut up, Anthony.
And it's you do that, Anthony. That's why, maybe you're placing blame. But I wanted to bring the opera singer piece up because I was like, oh, they took her, I think her name is Maria or something, she's Italian, and they made her into Sienna. So I was like, oh, that's where we got it.
Yeah.
And the first kiss of them comes from that. So hilarious scene all around. But so that's why I really enjoyed the book. I think there are many twists and turns between these two. And when you're like, oh, it's going to be a normal thing, bam, something else happens, I feel like. And it changes into something funnier or spicier. I feel like it's either or. So I can't wait. After this podcast, I will now be watching episode one. So I'm excited. Do y'all have anything else?
Nope. I think we've covered it tonight.
Perfect. Yeah. So that is, y'all, your little book synopsis. We obviously didn't cover everything in the books because we wanted to keep it light, but still, hopefully y'all get a little bit spice of the book now that we're going into watching the episodes. And we will be back next week with season 2, episode 1. But in the meantime, we have our own feed, y'all. Make sure you're subscribing to it and leaving us 5-star reviews. On our next podcast, we'll actually read all of them. So we have 3 currently. So let's try to get to 7 by next one. You know, so here's our call. Let's get to 7 5-star reviews by next episode.
Hell yeah.
And yeah. And thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And Geneva, with that, where can people find you?
People can find me at Peace Love Jen on Twitter, where I tweet about all the reality TV that I'm watching and random things in life. And then I just recently, this week, did a podcast with Sarah, and I also got Asia and Haley Strong involved, and we talked about the courtship, the first 2 episodes of that. So feel free to check that out. You know, we kind of did that in anticipation also for season 2 Bridgerton. And yeah, you can just find me in here with The Dark Walk and just around silent podcasts, etc. So yeah, just stay tuned.
Thank you. And as for you, Kirsten, where can people find you, Miss Busy Bee?
Yeah. So the good news is if you want to hear more from me, there is no shortage of that. You can hear from me every week talking BoJack Horseman with Lindsay Wilson over on BoJack Horse Pod, as well as every week talking Riverdale with Frail Mary Kwiatkowski over on Kowski Cast. That's cow with a K. Obviously this. And I am on some of the Big Brother Canada coverage over on REJP, and at the time that this comes out, I'll have been on the most recent Sunday morning live feed update. So definitely check out all of that, and go check out Sarah over on Crime Scene, which is the True Crime Tuesday podcast over on REJP, as well as follow her at Sarah Carradine. Oh, and follow me at Kirsten Said What.
Yeah, on all, especially Twitch.
Yeah, follow you, Sasha. Tell the people.
Yes. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter at funsize_04. And I'm sure be around over on Silent Podcast. And look out in April for a new podcast on the wrap up feed. Wink, wink. And with that, make sure you leave us that 5-star review, share with your friends so they can get to know us and get excited about season 2. Thanks, everyone.